Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 69. My special guest today is Steve King, and you are really going to enjoy this conversation. Before I jump in, I have one important announcement. The first live virtual coworking startup school session is on the calendar. It will be on Thursday, March 15th. If you've been considering the program, head over to www.coworkingstartupschool.com to get more details and make sure that you don't miss out on the first session. And if we've already talked, go ahead and send me an email to confirm your spot. The next session will likely be in June. So if you're anxious to get kicked off on the right foot in 2018, make sure you get into this session, which will also get you started in our flight group program. This program is for you if you are investing in your coworking space and want to avoid costly mistakes and stress by getting expert and peer support in a highly facilitated environment. We want to make sure you create the right space for you and your target market right from the beginning. We want to make sure you get the business model right so that you're set up for financial sustainability that matches your goals. We'll review your pro forma, help you with your product mix, design, sourcing furniture, working with vendors, getting your marketing systems down, hiring the right team or learning how to run the space yourself, and getting set up with the right tech, and more. You can absolutely piece a lot of support together from the podcast and from the new Everything Coworking Face Group, which I'm also really excited about. So this program is really for people that want to invest in access to a package that provides the information, resource, and support you need when you need it, in the order that you need it, and accompanied by individual access to me, other industry experts, and a curated peer group. So if it sounds like a fit for you, learn more at www.coworkingstartupschool.com. Okay, now onto my interview with Steve.
I am really excited today to be here with Steve King, who I think of being as a bit of a celebrity in the coworking world. He has run the annual coworking forecast, counting the number of spaces from the year. Steve, did you start in 2007?
We started our count in 2010, but we backcast to 2007.
Got it. So Steve is joining me today, which is lovely of him. I did a few episodes ago reviewing his forecast, thinking Steve maybe was too busy to join me. And he sent me a note and said, thanks for doing a review of the forecast. And I said, oh, Steve, I'd love to have you on anytime. And he quickly said, of course. So I'm thrilled to have you on today, Steve. And so, I'll share a little bit, kind of, I met Steve, I don't know, years ago at a Lexi meeting, I think, maybe in Seattle. He lives in Berkeley, not too far from where I am. And I'll let him share a little bit more about his work with his research firm, Emergent Research, but he's been really engaged in the coworking world, coming to conferences and doing the dirty work of forecasting for us and really writing about what's happening in the industry. And Steve, you can talk a little bit more about kind of your adjacent work with the big economy. But today we're going to talk about the topic. He wrote a recent article in Harvard Business Review, which I'll link to in the show notes, called Coworking is Not About Workspace, It's About Feeling Less Lonely. And I love this topic. I showed him, I jumped on video and we got on. I have a couple of books on loneliness, and I did an episode a few episodes ago, and I'll link to that in the show notes too, about loneliness, because I think it's a really salient topic. And kind of now that the industry is getting more mainstream, we're starting to talk about sort of what is it that's really underneath what's happening here. So Steve, thank you for joining us today. I'm thrilled to have you here. Can you tell us a little bit more about you and your background and Emergent Research and kind of how else you fit into the coworking industry?
Sure. And Jamie, thanks for having me. This will be fun. Emergent Research is a boutique research firm. We basically study the intersection of the future of work and small businesses and independent workers. And independent workers are freelancers, independent consultants, and others that work independently and relative to traditional employment. And so a lot of our work is around independent workers and startups, and that's what got us interested in coworking originally. And when we look at coworking in particular, we think about coworking as providing us a window on the future of work, future that we believe means more mobility, more independent work, more distributed work. And co-working, back when we first started looking at it in 2007, it was really fun to stumble across a co-working space, which was almost by accident, and go, wow, this could actually be big. And as it turned out, it is big.
Yeah, and really quickly, I will also include this in the show notes, but Steve, do you publish your newsletter daily? I think it's daily.
Well, we have a blog. It's smallbizlabs.com.
Yeah.
And that blog, you can sign up for the newsletter and you'll get a daily update, at least when we publish. And we tend to publish 3 articles a week. And basically those articles cover co-working, but more importantly, our broader interest is around the future of work and what it means for small business and independent workers. And so you'll see a mix of articles. Mostly, we did that originally because we wanted to have a repository, interesting articles and studies that we saw. And originally, we didn't even think about it as an external thing, but people found it, and now it gets enough traffic that it's kind of fun to keep up.
Well, yeah, and I love it because you often include things that maybe are not on my radar screen, but are, to your point, sort of related or adjacent to what's happening in the co-working industry, whether it's about the gig economy or I find that it's really good highlights. I always scan the subject line to see, you know, what it's about, and often we'll click through. And he mentioned one when we got on this morning that's on the homepage, because it's for today, about Yardi doing some research in the co-working world that I had not seen yet. So he's often breaking some news. So definitely take a look at that and think about subscribing.
Yeah, and we look more holistically at a combination of social, demographic, technological, and economic trends and shifts. And so oftentimes we're looking at things that aren't necessarily of interest to people focused on running their business day to day, but things that we think will have an impact on these sectors over the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, so if you have an interest sort of in the big picture, I think it's a great resource. Okay, so tell us, you wrote the loneliness book or article. What is it that kind of drove you to dig into that topic?
It's interesting. We've actually been looking at loneliness for a long time because it is the single biggest complaint that you hear when you ask people about working from home and working remotely. And that's not just coworkers, pretty much anybody who works from home or works remotely, whether they're a corporate employee or a small business owner, when you actually survey them or interview them and you say, what are your challenges? Loneliness is consistently the top issue. People miss other people who are, we're social creatures, and we've been culturally raised as social creatures forever, and we miss the water cooler. And so that has been known in many, many studies. That's been known for decades, and many, many studies have shown that. And so as we started to think about distributed work and what it might mean, so we're going back in our work to 2008, 2009, we were already thinking about loneliness. And so we've been thinking about it and tracking it. More specifically, as co-working has expanded, we've been thinking of it as a potential way for people to reduce their loneliness. And but what really triggered our recent round of research was a study we did about almost 4 years ago, where we were trying to understand business networking within co-working spaces, how much people were using it, was it expanding their business networks, what kind of benefit they were getting. And we did this study, and what was interesting was we got very positive results about business networking and co-working spaces, but actually the results were even stronger when it came to the few questions we asked about social aspects of co-working. And that kind of triggered our initial interest, and we followed it up with some other work. And what came out very clearly was co-working members really saw the social benefits of being in co-working and told us that it made them increase their social contacts, but also and made them less lonely. And at the time, even with that, was before a lot of noise that's going around now about the loneliness epidemic. And so when we did that study, we didn't understand to the degree that we do now how the negative health outcomes that come with loneliness. And there's been a ton of work done in the medical field and in the sociology fields around loneliness. You showed me a couple of the interesting books. There's a group out of BYU called the Social Connections Lab that's actually more medical researchers. And they've done some really fascinating work showing that loneliness and social isolation, which are actually two different things, both lead to increased risk of negative health outcomes. Yeah. So this has suddenly become a much bigger issue. And that's what prompted us to write the Harvard Business Review article.
Yeah, I guess it's tangential to loneliness, or I don't know what the right term is, but I talked in another podcast episode recently. I read, and I don't know if I'm saying his last name right, but Dan Butner's book on happiness.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, he talks about cultures, you know, happiness is directly correlated to how much time in the day you have to socialize. And so like Costa Rica is one of the places in his study where people are very happy. It's a socialist country, so their healthcare is paid for. They're not worried about sort of basic things. And his example in the book was like a guy who sells avocados in a fruit market. But, you know, the culture there is very much, you know, family oriented and spending a lot of time together and, you know, watching soccer and just like the social component. And he talks in the book, and I sort of poke at this a little bit, like 12 hours, like, you know, what qualifies as social time if you're looking at 12 hours, because most of us don't have 12 hours of, you know, before and work friend time. But I thought, well, this is the argument for co-working spaces, because, you know, if you need social time during the day, that's the only way you can get it if you're not in a corporate setting where you're seeing other people. But even then, I don't even know if you like those people that much. You know, I said something to my husband. He's like, oh yeah, my meetings do not count as social time. He's like, we hardly even have small talk. It's just not there. You know, culture. And so it's sort of the loneliness slash like decreasing loneliness and going to the other side of the spectrum of increasing happiness. And it just seems like such a natural way to get at those.
Yeah. And we see the linkages between decreased loneliness and increased happiness in our work amongst co-working spaces. And I think members, and I think it gets back also this difference between social isolation. I'm having a hard time saying that, and loneliness. So social isolation is when you are literally alone. There aren't other people around. That's physically alone. Yeah, that can be quantitatively defined. I spend a lot of time by myself.
Right.
Loneliness is a perception that you're not connected with other people. And you can be isolated and not be lonely, and you can be lonely and not be isolated. And I think some of the most interesting research we've seen is the fact that both of those lead to increased health risk. And so, and if you have both of them, if you're both isolated and lonely, even greater levels of health risk. And I think what's interesting is you can sort of see that in how people work. I mean, coffee shops are very popular places for people to work. And on most levels, working in a coffee shop makes no sense. It's very noisy. People are always coming in and out. They're disturbing you. You don't know anybody there. But they do solve for social isolation. And so so does traditional offices, even if you're not interacting with other people very much. And so you get kind of halfway there in those environments. And then what makes co-working so special and a lot of office environments so special is then on top of that, solving for loneliness.
Yeah.
And Gallup has done a whole lot of work for many years on the Gallup organization on engagement and what makes people engaged at work. And one of the single biggest factors leading to engagement at work is if you say yes to having at least one good friend and hopefully three good friends at work. And so you even see it in other types of research where when you actually have friends there, when you're less lonely there, you're not just less lonely and happier, you're also more engaged and more productive, according to Gallup's work.
Right.
And so we look at it and say, gosh, this is really a great value proposition for co-working and a value proposition that we think most potential members don't know about.
Meaning they don't totally connect the dots.
Yeah, when we talk to co-working members and ask them what brought you there and why are you there, almost all of them say they joined because they wanted a more business place to go work. It didn't dawn on them.
Professional, yeah.
Yep. It didn't dawn on them. And a fair amount of them will say, and we were hoping also for some business networking.
Mm-hmm.
But what we don't hear from them is it's going to improve my social situation. It's going to make me less lonely. I'm going to have more fun. I'm going to enjoy it more, and I'm going to be happier. But we hear that later from those people in our research. And so to us, that indicates, you know, we're not seeing, and when we talk to potential co-working members and say, have you thought about co-working? No one ever mentions that. And so that's I think a huge benefit and a huge value proposition that the potential users of co-working have yet to grasp. And even the ones that join aren't joining for that reason. That comes later. And I think that's going to be a marketing opportunity for the industry. It's also a marketing challenge for the industry.
Right. And I think that's kind of what I meant when I was saying, you know, I thought this was really interesting, but it's like not a lot of people are talking about it. And you said your article has gotten a tremendous readership and a lot of comments. But is it more at an academic level? I mean, what do you think it will take to sort of make the conversation about loneliness more? I feel like it's there's a stigma sort of related to it. Like, not very comfortable for someone to say, I feel lonely.
I think there is a stigma with it. I do think we're seeing a lot of interest in the broader topic of wellness, both at the corporate level and at the individual level. And so to me, this gets wrapped up into the wellness discussions. And I think we will see a reduction in the stigma associated with loneliness, particularly around saying I'm doing something to cut down on loneliness.
Yeah.
And I think people will start to use the language of wellness instead of loneliness.
Okay.
They won't say, gosh, I'm doing this because I'm lonely. I'm doing this because it's a healthier.
Right. Socializing is healthy. I'm trying to increase sort of the balance around. Yeah.
Yeah. So I definitely think the stigma is declining, and I think our language is shifting. But I also think the amount of attention that loneliness is getting right now also helps a lot in terms of reducing the stigma. And I, you know, our former Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, who also wrote a much better article than mine on.
Okay.
You know, he's a brilliant, brilliant guy. Wow. And, you know, his work publicizing this issue, and he links it directly to a part of it, directly to the rise of remote work. I think his work certainly is making it much more acceptable to talk about.
Yeah. So related to that, so you see co-working and the benefits, you've done research, and then you also look at the gig economy and the participants of that. I mean, what are kind of the implications of the gig economy on loneliness? And I imagine that's one of the challenges of the gig economy. What does that look like, and kind of how do you see that shifting over time, or will it?
Yeah, the gig economy, which has many definitions, but to us, we define it as anybody who has kind of this alternative work relationship compared to a traditional job. And so freelancers, consultants, dot, 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 not just Uber drivers, but including Uber drivers and others that work in the online platform.
Yeah.
Or the online platforms like an Uber or a TaskRabbit or something.
Work.
What's happening there is, and what we've seen is the growth of the independent workforce or the gig workforce. And that means more people are effectively self-employed on some level. And when you're self-employed, generally speaking, you start out as an independent. And that means you're likely to be in less social situations than traditional employees. And so the gig economy, and this is, you know, Vivek's work, also shows this, that he relates it to the rise of self-employment, but also remote work. And our work reflects what he's saying, which is those folks are more likely to be lonely and they're more likely to be socially isolated. And so as that continues to expand, and it's not just gig economy workers, it's remote workers for corporates, and distributed work is growing within the corporate world too. More and more people are going to be put in positions where they are more socially isolated and likely more lonely. And so we're going to have to come up with solutions for this or face the negative health outcomes that loneliness leads to.
And do you think corporations is that on their radar screen when they're making, I mean, sometimes it's a corporate real estate department, sometimes HR is involved, sometimes those two departments don't talk, which befuddles me. But, you know, when I go to conferences and sort of try to poke around who's making decisions, it's so interesting. Sometimes they just simply don't overlap that much. But is that issue on their radar screen, do you think, if they're making these decisions about remote work and how to manage flexibility?
I don't think on average it is. And today, what is starting to crop up at a lot of corporations are issues around employee wellness. And the wellness issue hits home because for corporations, it's a cost problem. The less well, the less healthy a workforce is, the more it costs corporations in terms of their health benefit costs. And so wellness has become a very big deal. Employees also are becoming more and more focused on wellness and are expecting wellness programs, increasingly expecting wellness programs from their corporations. And you really see that out here in Silicon Valley, but it's spreading across the economy. And I think as wellness becomes better understood and more incorporated into corporate thinking, remote workers and loneliness will start to come up on the radar screen. And I think that's going to happen fairly quickly. And we were talking about this earlier, but I was saying that I think there will come a time, I think we're years away from this, where even the lawyers at a corporation might say to the HR department, we need to do something about our remote workers and loneliness because otherwise we're exposing them to a health risk, which is potentially a legal liability for the corporation. Yeah. I think before that, we'll even see most corporations recognizing that and starting to say, yeah, we'll pay for co-working spaces or some sort of social outlet for the for this group. And when we did our most recent forecast on the growth of the co-working industry, that was one of the considerations we took into because we see corporate growth driving the next wave of co-working expansion.
I mean, it's interesting. I think when you talk about so we're not quite there in terms of language. I mean, so from your insights, I mean, you understand sort of the hat that a co-working space owner wears, and you're saying potential members don't necessarily verbalize or understand the loneliness benefit. I mean, is there, do you see some solution to that in terms of a market? You know, you mentioned sort of opportunity and challenge. Is there something you see there that's not being done that can be done? Or is this a shift that'll sort of, we have to be patient and it'll happen over time?
I actually think it's starting to happen already. We're seeing growing numbers of spaces that sort of combine our combination social clubs, work clubs or workspaces, things like Soho House and Newer House and even The Wing, which has gotten so much press, is trying to be kind of a lifestyle place.
The Wing is a great example because that one kind of puzzles me. And it, I mean, the loneliness piece alone may be the reason that exists, right? I mean, when I look at it from a model, I say, well, you know, it doesn't have real places to work. It's really a social club. And maybe that's a real driver, especially Manhattan. And it'll be interesting to see how that model works outside of Manhattan, I think. But I would guess Manhattan could be a real example of a place where people are not physically isolated in any way, but feel lonely because they're in such a big place with so many people. And yet maybe they're new there and they don't know many people and they don't have close connections and are looking for that.
Yeah. And I think it's an interesting model. And as I said, there are others, there are a number of co-working spaces now that have bars that turn into bars at night or restaurants. And so I do think it's starting to happen in some of the co-working spaces and these types of spaces are already really pitching themselves as a cure to loneliness, but they're not saying that in their marketing, obviously. Yeah. They're saying, you know, we're a great workplace, and oh, by the way, we have these really fun social activities.
Yeah.
And so I do think, I don't know how many of your listeners are old enough to remember the old Double Mint Twins commercial.
I do, Steve.
You know, that it's two in one. And I think co-working as an opportunity to be, or the Bud Light commercials were less filling or taste great. Well, we're a workplace. No, we're a social place. Well, actually we're two in one. And I think that pitch is going to increasingly resonate as this whole concept of loneliness and wellness becomes more well known across consumers and people in general.
Do you have any sense, and I don't know how deep your work sort of gets into the individual level, but, you know, we'll see people in a maybe more of a traditional co-working space, not sort of getting into the more social forward options, but, you know, people who won't interact so much, but they come in, you know, they do their work. How do you look at sort of that behavior? And, like, should a community manager be working harder to sort of help that person be less lonely? Or is being in an environment where they can talk to people and maybe make a connection, you know, is that enough for them? Like, kind of how much of an active role, if someone is really passionate about the loneliness aspect, should a community manager be playing?
I think this is a classic case of you bring the horse to water. And in our interviews with co-working members, a sizable percentage, and this is, we don't have hard data on this, but I would say based on our interviews, the qualitative side, about a quarter of the members we've interviewed have actually said, I'm not really that interested in socializing these people, but I really like them around.
And, right.
And I think that's fair. I mean, yeah. And then there's another group that say, I want to socialize, but on my terms.
Right.
Don't make me socialize. And then there's a group of people that are like, wow, the more activities, the better.
Right.
And yeah. So I think from an individual co-working space, you know, how you curate all those people is obviously a challenge. But I think the thing you have to do is create the opportunities and then let the space members decide how much they're going to participate. And I think in most spaces we've been in, they've, you know, you see kind of natural levels happening based on the community fact, you know, the factors around the community, how participatory the people want to be. I don't think it hurts a community manager to err a little bit on pushing people.
Right.
Certainly creating the opportunity for people to interact, I think is very important.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think it's hard sort of, in the game, you always wonder about the folks that are not engaging. And that's one of the kind of challenges I always see come from folks who are talking about what they're working on in their space, member engagement and that kind of thing. And sometimes I think, you know, to your point, there are segments of people within a space and their goals just vary in terms of how they want to handle, right, their social involvement. So something to keep in mind.
Yeah. And we definitely hear, you know, the reasons we constantly hear around why people are at co-working spaces include it motivates me. It has fewer distractions.
Yep.
It's a professional place to work and I want the business infrastructure. None of those factors play into the social side. So you just have to be aware that there are different reasons different people come to co-working spaces.
Right. And that you may sort of in a feel-good way address their social/loneliness goals, but maybe, right, they don't notice, you know, they're not as aware of it as sort of, right, checking a box for them because they didn't know that was a box that they needed to check.
Yeah, and the good news is, whether they know it or not, co-working always solves for social isolation. So, you
right.
know, that's a health benefit that everybody right. gets, whether they want it or not.
Yep, without the coffee grinders in the background.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, are you doing more work on this topic? What do you think is sort of the next evolution we'll see in sort of the loneliness landscape?
We actually are in just the beginning phases of a study that will include analysis of the levels of loneliness of remote workers, the not specifically co-working members, but remote workers in general. We're going to be asking corporate workers who work remotely a series of, they're part of the study. And so we're going to try to identify more broadly how remote work and distributed work leads to loneliness and see if we can compare that and contrast that with people that are working in co-working spaces. So try to get a better understanding of the two groups and what the differences are.
Well, co-working space owners, if I put that hat on, I mean, we love that. To your point, that certainly could expedite the attorneys going to the HR department and telling them they'd better give out stipends for co-working spaces.
We're all
waiting for.
Yeah, and I'm pretty confident we're going to find that on average, distributed workers are lonelier than those working in co-working spaces. It's going to be hard to imagine we won't find that. But it would be interesting if we didn't find that also.
True. I have two adorable dogs that keep me pretty good company while I'm at home, but It's I've used the word lonely when I'm not in my co-working space for sure too. It's good to have some respite, but well, consider yourself having an open invitation to come back on and chat about that when that's more salient and you have some results to look at, because like I said, certainly a topic of interest to our listeners and anybody that owns a co-working space. So, well, Steve, thank you for the work that you do. Like I said, we sort of think of you as a celebrity. You're counting spaces, you're doing research, you're, you know, kind of keeping us on top of the shifting landscape of what's happening with independent workers, which is certainly important in our world. So thanks. And thanks for joining us today. This is really interesting, and I look forward to your ongoing work on the topic.
Great. Thank you very much for having me, and I'm looking forward to coming back.
Sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.